With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smashbot. A city pushed to the edge. People pushed to the limit. And no one's got the guts to stop them.
It's collection time, Charlie.
3 murders.
Yeah.
4 rapes. 9 acts of random violence. This isn't a neighborhood. It's a war.
In a world gone mad, there is only one law. His. Charles Bronson. Death Wish 3. Bronson's back in New York, bringing justice to the streets. Charles Bronson, Death Wish 3.
Hello and welcome to Smersh Pod 3, the podcast that relights the fire of 80s action movies and celebrates the decade where the explosion was king. You remember that? This week we'll be just...
Is that an IRA thing?
It could well be. Yeah, I'll leave that in. This week we'll be visiting an old war buddy, getting people murdered, murdering people, and buying weapons via the post that also murder people. Yep, we're talking about Death Wish 3, and joining me to stamp on some roaches is comedian Steve Hall, who can be found on Twitter as @SteveHall.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm angry.
You're angry?
Having to talk about this film.
Well,
we should explain, because when we did this before,
yeah,
we sort of mutually agreed. We did Deathline before,
yeah,
in the previous series, and we agreed that that was just a thing that we had come up. Conversation is a good thing to talk about.
Mm.
Whereas with these, you gave me a list,
yeah,
of possibles,
yeah,
and I thought rather than going for like a classic I turned down the Terminator.
You did.
In favour of talking about Death Wish 3.
Imagine if last night we could have watched the Terminator. What a nice evening that would have been.
Because it's an interesting bit of social history. I was born in 1976. My family didn't get a video player until 1988.
Wow.
So we were very late. The first film we ever rented was Inner Space.
Right, good.
And so some of the early 80s and sort of 1985 type films, I think this is 85.
Yes, it is, yeah.
They still have this kind of mythic... like naughtiness to me.
Mm.
Things, and I was raised a good Catholic boy, so there are things that I wasn't. So even I've never owned Thriller, the album.
Right.
And obviously, I mean, it turns out my mum was right on that one.
Yeah, she knew.
Some of these films have this kind of cachet of like, oh my God, it's so naughty.
But did you go on tour with Michael Jackson when you were a small boy?
No, thankfully I was a very ugly child.
I don't think he got fussy in the end, did he?
I don't know, that's... That's the ultimate slam. Not only are they victims, they're pigs as well.
Well, we're off to a good start.
Yeah, yeah. So Death Wish was one of these ultimate ones of like, you know, the video nasty culture. I don't think the original Death Wish, were they? I don't think they were in the Death.
Not really, no. But this got a lot of flack at the time for the violence.
Yeah. And so I'd never seen the first two. And then knowing that I was doing this, I thought,
Well, the first two are kind of, well, the first one especially is like a hard-nosed revenge thriller.
Yeah, yeah.
Second one's a bit silly. And this is a cartoon. Yeah. It might as well be an animated cartoon called Death Wish and the Heroes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's odd because the first one, I mean, they're all terrible films.
Yeah.
But the first one is, you know, you can understand why there's some interest created by, where Death Wish 2 is one of the most horrible films.
Awful.
Utterly mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then this is risible.
Yeah, because the first one, his wife's murdered. Second one, his daughter's raped, then thrown and jumps out of a window and lands on some railings.
Yeah, she's raped in the first one.
Oh, you're right.
And then goes into a sort of catatonic state. Mm. Then in the second one, she's still in a catatonic state, and then she gets raped again. So she's very much the Little Mo of the Death Wish series. And then she escapes the attackers by jumping onto some railings
and dying.
And dying.
And which is, I don't even remember the rest of the film. I just remember that it relocates to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's all I remember about it.
Yeah,
and I keep thinking that's the one with Jeff Goldblum, but he's in the first one.
He's in the first one. Lawrence Fishburne is in the second one.
I knew there was someone significant apart from Charles Bronson.
Well, and the only good person in both those films is Vincent Gardenia.
Yes.
Who is who's great and then is killed very boringly and cheaply in the second one.
Yeah, you've seen the second one a lot more than I have.
I'd never seen it. I just watched it the other day.
Did you?
In preparation for this.
That's a lot of research. Yeah.
Well, I nearly didn't watch it because in obviously we'll talk about this a bit more, but the Canon Films documentary, they mention how nasty Death Wish 2 is.
Mm.
And it is like the lingering, they really linger on the rape scenes.
They do.
So they always sort of, their excuse was always, it's not exploitation, this happens in society. And you go, but it is exploitation, without, beyond any doubt.
And by the time you get to the third one, Paul, what's his name called? Paul Kersey?
Yeah, yeah.
He's become like...
I like to think of him as Jeff Deathwish.
Should we call him Jeff Deathwish? Jeff Deathwish. No. Yeah, let's do that. Because he's like Unlucky Al from The Fast Show, but with death. Like, everywhere he goes, someone gets raped or murdered.
And he has that kind of... He looks like a Far Show character.
Does.
I think Bronson's 64 by the time he makes this film.
Yes, he is. And he did two more.
And amazing. It looks like they've had to ADR everything to sort of stop him going, kind of go...
he doesn't say a lot in this either.
Yeah,
he's only got about 15 lines.
It is odd. It's a tranquilized performance. And he sort of looks... He spends most of the film looking like Peter Wingard crossed with Mr. Potato Head. That's the physical. I was trying to work out what he looked like.
Yeah.
He looks like Lech Walesa's stunt double. Like, if you were to say, like, if you saw a picture of him in this film and said, is this man an action hero or is he striking at Orgreave? You would choose the latter, I think. But,
oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, I would. He's in good shape, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's a few shots of him. Well, he's obviously... Like it's a fascinating career that Bronson's had, and I didn't know that. Apparently, he auditioned for Superman. This is according to Wikipedia.
Oh my god!
So this could be a Wikipedia style. Someone's had a little bit of fun with the editing, but he would have been in his 50s.
Yeah,
but supposedly he was turned down in favour of Christopher Reeve.
Peter Pan flew with children, Lewis, in a fairy tale. That would have been awful.
Suddenly, Superman just much more fixated on revenge.
Did you notice in the credits, Michael Winner's had a bit of fun here? It says it's edited by Arnold
Crust,
which is him. It's just a shit name. It's got to be him.
Yeah, and it's an odd, like, I'd love to, because again, it's in the Winner trivia, but I don't know the background to, is that he's got to earn a crust? Is it something as cheesy
probably,
as that?
Isn't it? Yeah.
But it's odd because obviously when a film is this bad and edited this badly, you would want to assume it.
You would, wouldn't you? It is edited really badly. And there's some really, really weird shot choices in this film.
Yeah,
like when he's talking to that chief of police guy, the camera's on the floor looking up at him, so it looks like there's a gun ornament on his desk that looks like his penis. And then the next shot, it's shot through his arm.
Yeah.
He's got his arm cocked on his waist. It's shot through his arm. Yeah. It looks so weird.
When he's in the public defender's apartment just before they bang.
Mm-hmm.
There's some shots like, they have not thought, like, maybe we could just move these ornaments out of the way. They're not essential to the shot. They've sort of filmed it through the ornament.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. They've got a chemistry and she loves bric-a-brac.
Not the TV series with Brian Kent. Although she might have done. This was filmed in London after all.
Yeah, well, it's odd because there's bits in New York, isn't there? And then yeah. and then there's bits that are so obviously East London.
Yeah, like the police station is a hospital in Finchley.
Yeah, I keep expecting to see Rowley from EastEnders.
But we begin with Paul going to New York.
Yes, and
to visit his friend Charlie.
And because it starts, and the opening, you know you're in for a bad time because it's the shot of the coach and the camera is wobbling.
Yeah.
It's obviously quite a blustery day. It's obviously shot on some turnpike, but you can see the camera moving.
Mm-hmm.
You can see, and they haven't done anything about it.
No. And the music's awful.
The music is terrible. And then it's weird because you hear the music and it sounds like an offcut from a porn film.
Yes.
And then it flashes up music by Jimmy Page.
Except it's not, is it?
Yeah, because they've used leftovers.
The bits that go, wow, pling, plong, those bits, that's Jimmy Page from Death Wish 2. But they used it again in this film. But he didn't do any of the other bits of music.
Because when I first saw his name, I was so angry at the film that I immediately wanted Robbie Williams to get his planning permission.
And, he did in the end, didn't he?
I think so. I hope. You know, I still want it to cause as much damage to Jimmy Page's
house. He wanted to put glory holes everywhere, didn't he? Herman Riley. Is that right?
Let's say it is.
Let's say that's what he's wanted to do. Jimmy Page objected because he'd be there eating his beans on toast and suddenly a penis would come through the wall and he'd feel obliged.
the old rock and roll instincts would kick in.
Exactly. A mud shark. So he's coming to New York to see his buddy Charlie. Now, Charlie... when we see Charlie for the first time, he's sat in his chair. It looks like he's looking at pornography.
It does.
It really does.
It's a lonely life for the older man.
He
could do what he wants. He served in Korea.
I applaud him. Unfortunately, though, his masturbation is interrupted by some, what they call in this film, it's either creeps or punks.
Yeah.
So some creeps.
Because this whole film, in fact, the whole series feels like a Fox News opinion piece where, and it's kind of in that mythology of like remember when we were kids, there was always, it felt like lots of schools had the rumours that skinheads were going to come and attack the school.
Yeah.
That was a fear lots of 7-year-olds seemed to have. And this whole film is based on that. So they're given phrases like creeps. And there are echoes of Trump in this. The way Trump talks about the menace coming from the border, this is this same fear.
Also, no black people live in his apartment block.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely an echo of Trump. He wouldn't be allowed in.
Yeah, it's his dad, Fred Trump's planning.
Fred Trump was a weird-looking man, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Donald's weird enough, but Fred Trump genuinely looked like a waxwork of a serial killer. Yeah.
Well, it's that fascinating that, you know, like Woody Guthrie wrote a piece about how much he hated, I think he wrote a song about how much he hated Fred Trump.
So yeah.
They echo into history as a family of arseholes.
They do. We should stop them. We should go back in time and stop them from happening. But that'll come into play later. Yeah. Anyway.
Because the creeps, this is the way they're presented. They've got this weird face paint thing that looks like the Amnesty International candle. And it's exactly someone like Michael Winner's idea of what a creep would look like, where it is so accidentally camp. They look like they're in a Village People.
And it looks like they've all been cast from performing arts.
Yeah.
Because there's one in particular later on who gets thumped, the black guy with the dreadlocks.
Yes,
and when he falls to the floor, he does it in a kind of ballet style, where he flings his body up.
And he's down. The one, he's in a sort of crop top.
Crop top,
and he looks fabulous.
Yeah.
But it is the most kind of like, you're on $20 a day, do your acting.
He's also the one that says, "What the fuck, man?" to that old woman. I liked him.
Because in this one, when they attack Charlie, there's the phrase, "Give me the money, homeboy." And again, it's a seemingly 90-year-old man's idea of the way young miscreants would speak.
Mm. Yeah. Well, also policemen, because the police chief later on says the word dude at the end of every sentence.
Yeah.
But everybody in this block of flats hears Charlie being beaten. And they're so ashamed because they don't do anything. They're too scared.
Yeah.
Apart from one who calls the police.
Yeah, I mean, that's an accurate capturing of, if they were filming in East London, that is exactly what would happen in East London. Except they wouldn't be scared. They just wouldn't care.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And this is because there's bit, and this is where the soundtrack, these are the bit, the non-Jimmy Page bits of the soundtrack, because I think it's meant to be atmospheric and it sounds like someone has eaten a pizza and put a microphone to their stomach as they digest it.
You get that later on as well with that kind of one that goes bloop, 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 yeah, yeah. Bloop, bloop, bloop.
And this is the book, so not knowing about this one, I watched this one before I watched the others. Yeah. And this was the point where I was like going, I have chosen, but I think I even sent you a message going, is it too late to change my mind?
You did. And I said, no, it isn't. But you said you were going to stick with it. And that speaks a lot about you.
That's the Catholic upbringing. That's self-flagellation.
But anyway, so Bronson arrives just in time for the creeps and punks to run away.
And there's a nice bit where he's given the cabbie $20 to get out of a traffic jam.
Yes.
And he literally mounts the pavement and then joins another traffic jam.
That's right. That's $20 worth. If he'd given him $40, he'd probably gone a bit further. But he gets there and Charlie is lying on the floor covered in blood. I mean, at first, it's that when Bronson comes into the house, so when Jeff Deathwish comes in, there's moaning and I'm wondering, you know, he might have been thinking, knowing Charlie, he's probably still masturbating. No, he isn't. He's lying on the floor. He's dying.
And it begins to look at it. It could just be an advert for life insurance at that point. It could Michael Parkinson or Peter Purvis could step out.
And you get this free pen, which was jabbed into his anus, sadly. But Charlie's last words are, look after my stuff until I get back.
Charlie? Hey, Charlie. Jeez, Charlie, what happened?
Pa, take care of my things, will you? Till I get back.
When you're dead, asshole.
He said, take care of my things, which, given that he might be a pervert, it could be like Bronson's worried. It just opens. It's just butt plugs.
It's butt plugs and Nazi memorabilia. Oh, no, Charlie. But the police burst in at this point because Bronson's drawn his weapon, his gun. And the police think he's done it.
Yeah, and this is the first. There are so many cliches in this film, and this is one of the problems with the whole series is that there are so many things. This is it's a mess of derivation from other films. So the creeps, it's like they've obviously watched a bit of Mad Max in the way they behave, and even like in the first one, the Vincent Gardini character in the first two films, I think is very similar to Taking a Pelham 1-2-3. That he's constantly got a cold. And Martin Balsam, who obviously crops up in this film, that, you know, him sneezing is a big part of Pelham. And in fact, someone says to Vincent Gardini in Death Wish 2, they say Gesundheit. And I wonder if that's a tacit acknowledgement.
It's just Michael Winner ripping things off.
Yeah. And so this is the ultimate clue. This is like North by Northwest. The police arrive just as he's...
It's true.
Because you wouldn't... Like, when it's obviously, you know... He's been violently assaulted by several people. Mm. You're going to go, well, this old caretaker, this bloke who looks like a character from Guess Who, it's definitely him.
Yeah.
And it's because it's one of the themes of Death Wishes. And again, that very Fox News type thing of the police are incompetent. Mm. But they're not even, this is so lazily done. Like, I've seen, there are episodes of The Bill that have put more work in.
This is probably shot near where they filmed the film. But he's taken to the police station and beaten up immediately, which I think this is quite funny.
Yeah.
He literally is sat in a chair and then starts punching him.
One of the people who beats him up is Captain Hollister from Red Dwarf.
Yes.
Which, I mean, it should have really affected his application to become captain.
There are a lot of American actors who were living in England at the time this. Like Frost from Aliens is one of the groups.
Yeah.
The manager from Top Secret who dies via the anal intruder is the baddie's lawyer.
Yeah, there's lots of people who you find yourself pausing, sort of going like, I know him from somewhere, but with this one, you hate it so much you don't bother to find out.
Exactly, yeah. But anyway, he's taken to prison, he's taken to the police station, and Ed Lauter, who used to play cops all the time, he comes in, he's the chief, and he's a bit too on the nose for me, because every time he walks in, a cockroach will appear.
Yeah.
And he has a line where he steps on him and goes, cockroaches, I hate them.
Son of a bitch. I'll be a son of a bitch. It's not Kimball. I know you. Kersey. It's Paul Kersey. You see, I was with the New York PD the night they brought a vigilante in with a bullet in his leg. You're out like a light. It's been 10 years. Mr. Vigilante. Last damn thing I need is a vigilante. Dude, you're in big trouble. What were you doing up in that area? East New York and Belmont.
I was visiting a friend.
Well, maybe you did. Probably not.
I found him that way. And I'm no more Mr. Vigilante.
Well, what do I do with you, dude?
I don't know, but I want a lawyer.
No, you don't. Roaches. I hate them.
Yeah, they've really done one draft of this film.
They definitely kind of
gone,
have.
And they've obviously at the time gone, oh, this is so... well done, me. The cockroach. Because there's a bit later on where they focus on... It's like someone's house. There's a picture of... It's a painting of the American cavalry.
Mm.
And then some music goes... But again, they're like they've high-fived each other going, oh, we're so subtle.
There's a wonderful... I found some great footage of this being filmed. And every time you see Winner directing anything, he's got this massive cigar in his mouth. He looks ridiculous. Can you imagine the atmosphere on this set?
Well, because he's another one. So by osmosis, like when I was born, he was always shit.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of his films are deemed worthy of attention. That by cultural osmosis, he was just representative of just that utter conveyor belt of bollocks, where the cynicism. So I remember, is it Dirty Weekend?
Yes.
That was just as I was beginning to get into films. And I've never seen that, but I remember it got quite a bit of press coverage at the time.
And Parting Shots.
Where yes.
Chris Rea plays a man who's got cancer and decides to kill everyone he doesn't like.
Bloody Nora. Because you did a live screening of Bullseye.
I did.
I hadn't realised that was Winner as well.
Yeah. Did you go to the Bullseye one?
No, I think I was working that night, unfortunately.
Son of a bitch. Anyway, it's there to download if you wish. the chief talks to him and says, I think he's saying his name's Kinsey or something.
Well, because he's pretended to be Kimball.
Kimball, there you go.
And I was wondering, is that a fugitive nod?
Oh, it could be, couldn't it? I was thinking of, because I'm such a cultural vampire, that I love culture so much, all I could think of was Kindergarten Cop. I'm Detective John Kimball. I'm here to ask you some questions. But yeah, it's probably the fugitive. Yeah, you're right.
But he remembers him. Ed Lauter remembers him.
Yeah, he says, I was working in New York at the time. He said, I've got your file.
Yeah.
So he's like a groupie.
He remembers him from a bullet in a leg.
That's right.
So it's amazing if you remember every shooting that happened in New York over a 10-year period.
You'd have hell of a memory, wouldn't you? You'd have to go on the sort of generation game.
Yeah, you could show that on You Bet.
Thank you, yeah. Want to put a bet on it?
You bet.
See, I'm glad you remember that. That was the thing Bruce Forsyth brought to that programme was... catchphrase.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, don't fret, get set. Are you ready? You bet.
There you go. And then Matthew Kelly came in and they all went.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a young Paul Merson watched it and became a gambling addict.
Is that right?
No.
Oh.
I'd like to suggest that Paul Merson's problems are entirely Bruce Forsyth's fault.
I think everyone's problems are Bruce Forsyth's fault.
I didn't know. I saw The Good, the Bad and the Queen at the Palladium. I didn't know that Bruce's ashes are buried under the stage. Palladium.
Oh, of the Palladium. I thought you meant under the everywhere the good, the bad, and the queen play.
It's an unusual rider.
He buried himself under the Palladium. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't.
That's fucking awful.
It's kind of creepy. Like, I think obviously it's meant to be like, here's the place that made him, but it is like, so you are, the performers are literally dancing on his grave.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's good as well. I mean, I bet there's a lot of people who'd like to do that. And I know I would. Anyway, so the policeman says to him,
"Because is this film? This is what I was going to ask. Is this film? Is this regarded as like? Because this is there is some of the dialogue here is like, you know, terrible.
Yes.
Has this been reevaluated? Is this a so bad it's good type film? What was this film's reputation?
I think it's one of those cult so bad it's good things. Yeah. It's not as wildly celebrated as a lot of films.
Because it's fascinating. If Death Wish was like, you know, it's violent, and for its legacy to go from one of the series is regarded as like this benchmark in violence, and one film is regarded as pantomime.
I don't know, because I saw this as a kid when it came out on video, And as a child, I loved it.
Right, yeah.
Because it's a cartoon. It's stupid. Yeah.
And the computer game of this was...
Yes, I loved the computer.
And was famed for its violence. Mm.
The actual pixelated character of Bronson looked exactly like him.
Because I watched, there's a bit of it on YouTube, the Commodore 64, presumably because he was 64. That's the tie-in.
But yeah, because he was so featureless by the time he was 64.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very easy to make him a pixelated character. That's what I think.
Yeah, because his own moustache just looks like a set of pixels.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, check it out. It looks exactly like him.
Because we get this really bad dialogue where Jeff Deathwish says, you always violate people's constitutional rights. And then Ed Lauder says, I'm the law. That means I get to violate your constitutional rights.
And that's not how it works. It's literally not how it works. Yeah. But he punches Charles Bronson.
Yes.
Charles Bronson kicks him. And he says, get him in the cooler.
Yeah.
Again. And as he kicks him, all of these police run in and go, you son of a bitch.
And cooler, again, I associate with The Great Escape. Great Escape. So there's these, I'm sure they would say, oh, it's an intentional homage. And you're going, I don't think it is.
No. But when he gets in the cooler, there's a man there, a weird guy, who says, looking for trouble, man. And a man wanders over and just punches him in the stomach. Yeah. And then he falls over.
And this really is, like, this is the, like... All of these people are struggling actors.
Yeah.
That you would have been served a coffee by all the entire contents of that prison cell at some point.
Yeah.
And so it's all that level of, like, high performance. There's a certain way they present a knife, that thing where they if it's a flick knife, and they'll put it next to their face, like, ta-da! Mm-hmm.
And the light has to shimmer off of it as well. But when he gets into the prison cell, he makes a beeline for the toilet.
He does.
Because I'm thinking that he really needs a wee.
Yeah, well, he's 64.
He's 64. And a man informs him that he ripped it out.
Yeah.
So he can't have a wee. And then the man attacks him. And Jeff pushes his head through the bars.
Through the bar. So this is, and it's one of the, where they've just gone, you know, we've gone for this gritty realism. Should we just have a man's head fit through bars that are obviously too small for him? Yeah, fine.
I also read that in this scene there was supposed to be a male rape scene, which was written but not filmed. I'm imagining they brought that to Bronson and went, so this guy here, this is Paul. Say hi, Paul. Paul's going to have sex with you against your will. I'm not doing that. Okay, Paul, you can go home.
And that's, again, because they've just re-released A Clockwork Orange.
Yes.
And I saw a screen of it with Malcolm McDowell. And my wife had never seen it. And she was finding it.
What did Malcolm McDowell think of it when you went with him?
He was mainly annoyed by the interviewer.
Okay.
He was kind of emphasising how much of it he developed with, where he says, with If Lindsay Anderson, he was going, that's all Lindsay Anderson, whereas this was much more collaborative. And it's interesting one of the things my wife, that remains problematic with Clockwork Orange is there's lots of lingering on boobs.
Yes.
And they're all pneumatic. That obviously could be argued that that's part of the point of the film as well. But whereas, so this has huge debts to Clockwork Orange. I thought the whole series, there's bits. But it's interesting that they still chicken out of a male rape.
Mm.
That it's the fundamental attitude towards women displayed by these films is... it's almost like Michael Winner was some kind of grotesque pervert.
It is, isn't it? But I would pay good money to see Charles Bronson made love to by another man. I wouldn't, though. His face is sort of squished up enough. Imagine if he was in pain.
Well, because he acts, I was trying to remember the name of, and again, another screening of yours, the old men film in Norbert Smith.
Oh, The Dogs of War.
It was The Dogs of War, so Peter O'Pist and
Oliver Guinness.
That Bronson would not be out of place.
No.
Now step away from the table. Well, well, it is most convenient that I should be dropping in. So, Major Cartwright, we meet again.
Again?
Yes. We met 4 years ago in Berlin.
The 1936 Olympics.
Your athletic ability deprives the Reich of 3 gold medals.
I think you'll find it was four.
So he's in the prison cell, and we meet Brad from Superman 3.
Yes.
Who's Gavin O'Hara.
Oh, that's the other thing. So there's a line that doesn't make sense before we. So he pushes his head through the bars.
Oh, yeah.
Then someone says, talk about getting shit faced.
That's right.
That only works if he'd put his head down the toilet. So it's like, I reckon the script would have originally said he jams his head down the broken toilet.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Like, if he's head through the bars, you would say to him, like, you're barred, or something like that. So we meet Gavin O'Hurley.
The son of Dan O'Hurley. From RoboCop.
Yeah, so that's...
And The Last Starfighter.
Blimey, I haven't seen that since I was...
He plays like a alien with a raise in the face.
So Gavin O'Hurley, who in Willow, with lots of hair, looks great.
Mm.
So they've gone for the opposite thing. Obviously, this is pre-Willow, where the idea that a gang would shave the middle of their head so that he's meant to look scary and he looks like Neil Kinnock. So that's all I can have in my head, is that he's about to, like, trip over on a beach or go, we're all right.
I'd pay amazing amounts of money to have someone redub him as Neil Kinnock. Coogan will do it.
Because he looks like Neil Kinnock, and he looks a bit like Charles Dance in sort of Firstborn.
Or For Your Eyes Only.
And it's just not, you just sort of think, this, you know, he's the most menacing creep on the streets, and the only thing he has to fear is sunlight.
Or an election.
Bond. Welcome to All Rather Mysterious, the podcast that aims to unlock the mysteries of the past with the key of fact. My name is John Rain.
My name is Eleanor Morton.
My name is David Reed.
Please join us as we present to you mysteries that have baffled the world.
You had any noises?
What about a door creaking?
You don't have to do it.
That weird kadoonk
that lights going off makes for some reason in films.
All Rather Mysterious.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Smash Bond.
But he has a fight with Gavin O'Hara.
Yes. Because then there's the thing where he goes, I want to move in on that one in the corner. And no one sort of goes, okay, you're an intimidating boss. You want to attack a 64-year-old man. There's some genuine brick shit houses here. Mm. You're going to make a statement by attacking that potato.
But he does. He picks on him, and Jeff Deathwish fights back.
Yeah, and he doesn't quite win this one, does he?
Because
Gavin O'Hurley says, "There's a hey man, I always win."
Mm. And then he gets saved by the bell, basically, because someone says, "Your lawyer's here."
Yeah,
to the bad, who's called Fraker.
Fraker, and again, that's just the clumsiness of it, that the detective is Schreiker, mm-hmm. and he's Fraker, and mm-hmm. no one's gone, you could just change them.
To put them together, you get Cooler Shaker.
The worst crime of all.
Exactly.
Because later in the film, it's listed. I heard it as Mandy. There's one bit where he answers the phone, or he's on the phone to someone, he goes, "Hi, it's Mandy Fraker." Now, it is listed as Manny in a few places, but I heard Mandy.
That's even better.
And I love the idea that, because he looks like he's in palliative care. He does not look like the head of a crime cartel.
No, he doesn't. No. But he gets out and he turns to Bronson and says, "I'm going to kill a little old lady just for you."
Which is very sweet. It's lovely, isn't it? Like a homage murder.
Mm. Maybe he works at Dignitas. Maybe he says, "Just for you, I'll dedicate my next killing to you." But Fraker's lawyer, as I mentioned earlier, is Nick Rivers' agent who died via the anal intruder in Top Secret.
Nick, I've tried everything. The embassy, the German government, consulate. I even talked to the UN ambassador. It's no use. I just can't bring my wife to orgasm.
And then we meet Miss Davies, who's the public defender.
Yeah, she's because you can tell that there's a really actory way. Gavin O'Herlihy, when he meets his lawyer, he sits on a stool in a way that if someone had gone to a really overly pretentious drama student, I want you to sit in that stool. He kind of does that like vault over it, and it's like you can tell. It's like you could if someone the way someone will hold a mug. If they're wanting to be a particularly nerdy teacher, they'll hold the mug in a funny way.
Yeah. Also, Ed Lauter earlier, when he sat down to talk to Bronson, he flipped the chair around.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly where you wonder, has that... It feels like that's come from Winner.
Mm. Definitely. This is a middle-class man's idea of action.
Yeah. And then, because then you meet the lawyer, and again, this phrase, because she says to Schreiker, "You're violating all his rights." And that feels to, again, that middle-class idea. "You're violating my rights."
And then the police have a... Lauter has a briefing with all these policemen. And he says, "The crime's really bad. We've got to do something about it." And then one of them goes, "Well, we tailed some of the bad guys." And he said, "Oh, what happened?" And he said, "Crime went up 11%. Yeah. How shit are you? Yeah. I mean, it's not as if they're doing it covertly. You can go to that neighbourhood and you see about 3 murders in 10 minutes.
I like the way they deliver it like a punchline. So that bit of info is delivered like it's an episode of a 1980s sitcom.
Yeah.
Rather than, it's like the idea that the chief of police is not in possession of the facts.
Mm.
Crime went up 11%. Pause for laughter.
But then he decides, he comes up with a brilliant idea. Right? He goes to see Bronson. And he says, "Come on, me and you are going to have a talk." And then he says, I know what you do. I know what you did. How about you do it again? And I'll turn a blind eye." Essentially.
Because it's been suggested that that since we've seen him in Death Wish 2, there are other incidents that he's sort of turned... He's made it a hobby.
Mm.
It's important. If you can make your job your passion.
Yeah. I had a friend when I was a kid. His dad used to build and fly aeroplanes, model aeroplanes. when I was a kid, my friend's dad went out at night with a gun and murdered punks and creeps. Same sort of thing, I suppose.
It's as if the first, we've seen his origin story.
Mm.
I remember the Batman film where they suggest the one from the 90s where they suggest that, his parents get killed and he hides in a cave.
Yes.
And there's bats and that's why he becomes Batman. A friend of mine got mugged on the tube, and while he was being mugged, he looked up and saw a poster, an advert for Mr. Cadbury's Parrot.
Parrots scare me. It's time my enemies shared my dread.
Because the plot to all of these is paper thin.
Mm.
So, but at least with the previous ones, they're so simple
that
there is a grim logic to it. Whereas, this idea of I'm going to use you.
Yeah. I'm weaponizing you. And then we go back to Fraker, who goes back to his original gang.
Oh, there's a bit where Bronson lisps as well, where they're going to go, "Where has he been?" He goes, "I've been in the country having a rest." And they don't go, "Shall we do that again, Charles?"
No.
"Where have you been recently, Kersey?"
"In the country. Having a rest."
I don't think him and Winner got on in this.
Oh, did they not?
Well, I can understand. Because I read an article once saying that Winner had filmed loads of other second unit action stuff that Bronson didn't like.
Oh, really? Right.
And they fell out. And that's why when they did the fourth one, Winner didn't get the call.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure he was
upset. Like, I'd love to know what Winner, like, how he got funding constantly for this. Well, I know, so this is canon films.
They were like a fucking, you just go there with a toilet roll with a film written on it, they give you the money for it.
Because and this is two Israeli,
Menachem Golan, and I can't remember, Steve Globus.
Yeah. But this film is the worst human rights abuse ever committed by Israelis.
Yes, I think it might be. Yeah. I mean, although he did do that Delta Force film.
Oh, yes.
Which he directed himself. And they did that wonderful, I love that wonderful story from that. Was it called The Last American Virgin?
Oh, yeah.
Where she has an abortion, the guy comes to hospital and brings her a Christmas tree and some oranges, because that's an Israeli custom. But to the rest of the world, that just seems fucking mental. He turns up with a Christmas tree and an orange. Sorry, you had an abortion. Have a Christmas tree and an orange.
At least he didn't bring the Christmas tree before the abortion. It might imply that that's what they use.
Oh, that's harsh. But Fraker returns to his gang.
Yeah.
And there's like a new guy who's calling the shots. I'm in charge. And Fraker stabs him in the throat.
Yeah, pretty, and with no blood.
No. Good for him.
Is this what could, and that's because Schreiker has said to him, he said to Charles Bronson, I'll bury you so deep they'll never find the bones.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
They found dinosaurs, mate. They were buried quite deep.
That's quite a lot of work you're creating for yourself. I'm going to really dig a long way. I'm going to really exhaust myself.
I guess you could get a load of policemen to do it. Yeah. He's the chief. Oh, there's also, when Fraker murders that fella, he says the best line I've ever heard. He brings out his flick knife. He
says, yes. Yeah.
This is a sticker. And you're the sticky. That's been written by a middle-aged man.
And again, they've not gone. It sounds like sticky.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've wiped a toffee apple on him. They're quite happy with it. And what's odd, the screenwriter of this film goes on to do Arachnophobia. So there are good things in his future.
Apart from, well, it's not his fault. Arachnophobia always bothers me because the spider goes when it gets shot.
Yeah.
Spiders don't make noises.
Yeah, that's a.
Well, I've never had sex with one. They might. Do you ever have sex with a spider?
Yes. There was once, in younger days, a girl who I'd had a dalliance with, my sketch colleagues said she looked like a spider.
How?
So they bullied me by buying lots of little rubberized spiders. Uh-huh. It's a really weird thing to do.
How does a person look like a spider? What was
they
it?
Were very limmy. That was their
right. argument. Okay. And they lived under the toilet.
Yeah.
They watched you having a dump. So Miss Davies is over the moon that Bronson's being released.
Yes.
And she says, do you want to press charges? Because they violated your rights, as you said. And he says, nope.
Yeah. And then she gives him her number.
She does. Yeah. She says, here's my number. Let me know. Yeah.
And again, I'm trying to remember what I recognised her from. She's another of those things. You kind of go, oh, you've been around somewhere.
No, I don't know. I should have looked it up, but I didn't. I think she was in Death Wish 3.
Yeah.
She's probably in another Winner film.
Oh, that was. I've got all these. I've written because I was hating. It's, you know, when you're enjoying a film, you're happy to pause it and like to write, like kind of remind yourself. Whereas there's a few bits where I've like gone, what the fuck have I written here? Because it's the when they warn him, there's bits of incompetence. It's the bureaucracy. So before they release Bronson, they say we're arranging a release. It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
There's always like bloody paperwork. And then he kind of goes, there's a new breed on the streets. And he goes, because they all shave their heads and wear these. And then you can tell that before he does this is a sticker, you're the sticky, you see a ghetto blaster.
You do.
And again, it's the old person's idea of, look, there's a ghetto blaster.
This was around the time of the Guardian Angels, remember them?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's nothing like that in this.
Yeah, Curtis Sliwa. That's a pub quiz.
Also, this is just after the Bernard Goetz? I might have the name wrong. It was a guy on the New York subway.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Who shot three black guys.
Yeah.
And claimed that they'd mugged. Well, a lot of people aren't sure whether he was actually mugged.
Yeah, well, I think they later admitted they were planning to mug him. But
right.
He he used it, it's like a rapid fire technique that he'd learned. So he fires four shots in however many seconds.
Right. Because when you watch the behind the scenes interview from Death Wish 3, Bronson's asked a question about it. He just says, oh, I don't know what's going on in his mind, but I know what's going on in Kersey's mind.
Death Wish 3 parallels the true life story of New York vigilante Bernard Goetz, who gunned down four youths as they assaulted him on a subway train. In this new action thriller, Charles Bronson returns to the streets as our favorite vigilante, Paul Kersey.
I don't know what was in Goetz's mind, and I don't know what was in the minds of those who were shot at. But I do know what was in the mind of Paul Kersey, the character I played in Death Wish 1.
I don't think he does. I don't think he even knows that. So he returns to his neighbourhood. And,
yeah, we see him wandering the neighbourhood.
Yeah, kind of looking for trouble.
Yeah, looking like a bewigged nonce.
Yeah, he can't catch the Giggler. I was reading that the Giggler is taken from the original Death Wish novel.
Yeah, and because the original novel, the bloke hated the film so much that he wrote a sequel to the novel because he was so angry. So it's odd that they're like stoking him even more by invoking it.
Did he do it like The Lost World? Did he do it that the Bronson goes out running amok in San Diego like Michael Crichton had to do? Anyway, so this is where we see Alex Winter.
Yes, we see Deanna Troi have her bag snatched.
And Alex Winter gets on her car and says, I want to eat you, baby.
And Deanna Troi being an empath, she's going to feel the genuine upset.
She feels the anger and upset.
It's weird. I didn't know that Marina Sirtis was British. So seeing interviews, she's in the Canon Films documentary.
Well, she had a horrible scene to do. We'll get to later.
Yeah.
But yeah. She drives down to a car park with him on her bonnet. Yeah.
And you would think that she has the upper hand in that scenario.
You would, but she doesn't. But luckily, in the nick of time, Jeff Deathwish leaps out from the shadows and smacks Alex Winter on the head with an iron bar.
Yeah.
Letting Troi drive away.
Yeah. And there's lots of injuries that aren't in any way compared. Like, there's that throughout this film, there are some comedy injuries.
Yeah.
And so the whacking him with an iron bar causes him minor inconvenience.
Yeah. Whereas it would probably put you in hospital for a while, I imagine. Maybe he's on so many drugs.
And this is, there is like, my enjoyment of this film was increased 4% by realizing it was Alex Winter.
Yes.
Wouldn't
it be good if he's actually, this is canon, not canon, canon. That he's actually, who was he? He was Bill, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was trying to remember which one he was.
Yeah, because I only remember, Keanu Reeves calling himself Ted Theodore Logan Esquire, which I always enjoyed. He's Bill. So it'd be good if this was part of their homework.
Yeah.
He was studying about being a rapist in a gang. Yeah.
Well, I can't remember exactly how they do it, where they interfere with his underwear, and he could go, I totally Melvin Death Wish.
Yeah, that would be good. But then he meets Martin Balsam, down and goes, hey, hang on, I'll come down.
And it really is. That's the upset. Martin Balsam is one of the greats.
Yeah.
And he looks fat and sweaty and just clearly, I don't know if he's in financial difficulty or...
Of course he is. He wouldn't be in this if he wasn't, would he? You wouldn't do this if you didn't need money.
Because they paid, like Bronson does this, because they paid him like $1.5 million or something like that.
$10 million budget and Bronson gets $1.5 million of that. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
But yeah, Bolson comes down and says to him, he takes him up to his apartment and tells him about Charlie. And at this point he says, Charlie talks about you all the time. And I'm starting to think that Charlie was a bit like Father Stone from Father Ted, that Bronson didn't really like him. It would have been great if he'd have gone in his house and there was a painting of him and Bronson together. But yeah, so they all served in the war.
Yeah, and again, it's that thing of like, again, the foxification of it. They're veterans. You know they're good guys because they're veterans.
Yes.
And Balsam says, like, what goes on out here is a disgrace. Which is a very Trump word.
It is, isn't it? But he also says, you missed the funeral. He's only even got a night. Yeah. That's fucking quick going, isn't it?
Imagine. That is true, yeah.
Yeah, he's been gone one night and they've had the funeral. His body isn't even cold. He might not be dead.
Yeah, and the flat is basically untouched as well.
Well, he says the police cleaned it up. Do they do that? I don't think they do that.
That's really nice. They assault people. They violate their constitutional rights. But they're very tidy.
Yeah, he says they dusted for prints and then they cleaned up. Is that how it works? He says they don't care, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
But they care enough to make it clean. So that's nice. but he says the rent's paid to the end of the month.
Yeah.
You can stay there. Would you want to stay in a place where your friend's been murdered? Yeah. I don't think I would.
But it's that thing of like, your friend's just been killed here, but have you seen his bed? She's got tremendous, and it's got great views of the creeps.
This is like Joaquin Phoenix putting a tent where River died. It's a nice spot.
The number of the eyeline shots in this film, like he looks out the window and Gavin O'Hurley, he's just there.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah, he looks right up at him. There's no fucking way he'd see him from down there.
And again, having to look up with Gavin O'Hurley's complexion, he's trying to squint.
It's a good point. But we find out that the reason Charlie was killed is because he wouldn't pay protection.
Let's throw that in as well.
Yeah. Protection from what?
Yeah. From accidents. From accidents and trips.
This is like...
Give us some money or you might not get a side-opening bath.
We're not always there for the terrible things in life. What were they called? We won't make a drama out of a crisis. I don't know who they were now. Anyway, so Bronson has Charlie's apartment.
And he knows, and this is where we identify the giggler. And there's just bits where he says he murdered someone. And Bronson says, how do you know it was him? And Martin Bronson just goes, it was him.
Hmm. Again, that sounds like a an old white guy pointing at a ethnic and going, of course it was him.
Yeah, yeah.
Could have been somebody else. No, it was the black guy. But then Deanna Troi and her husband come in.
Yeah.
And he thanks Bronson for saving him.
This is the patronising, like, because there's this vague suggestion that Bronson reunites the different cultures and nationalities.
I'm sorry, Steve, but he does.
So you can tell the vague respect to the Hispanic people is that rather than saying this is Maria Rodriguez, they really hit the R's. Mm. So this is Maria and Rodriguez.
Mm. What's he called?
Jeff Deathwish.
No, the husband.
Oh, I think, is he Rodriguez? I thought he was Rodriguez.
Oh, is he? Because I was going to say, I don't even think, if you hear his name, I don't remember it.
No, I think he's Rodriguez.
I can't roll my eyes.
And it's so, because he's obviously got a moustache as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, it is odd that, like, him and Bronson talking, it looks like a vox pop on That's Life.
It does. Or a father and son body swap comedy. Like, he's inside the young man's body. And he's trapped inside Jeff Deathwish's body. Kind of like Vice Versa 2, The Revenge. That'd be good. But he tells them, don't worry, what my friend Wiley is coming.
Yeah, and there's obviously product placement.
Big time. Because we even get a little bit where he stops and goes, you know, you can adjust the calibration for the bullets. It's really good.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Did you hear the fact about that gun? Every time this film's shown in America, the sales spike.
Is that so?
That is so.
That from people shooting themselves in the head while watching it.
But that's the thing in America. In this country, you see that gun. Oh, spoiler alert, Wiley is a gun.
Yeah.
When you see that gun.
Wildy, I think it's.
Oh, it's Wildy. Sorry, yeah.
Because I think it's the bloke's name.
It is. Sorry, yeah, it's Wildy. When you see that gun, a British person looks at that and goes, fucking hell, that's awful. It's literally a hand cannon. And in America, they're like, oh, I have one of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to violate my constitutional rights of being able to shoot holes in
Death
something.
Wish 3 is aspirational shopping.
Well, it is. As you say, it's Fox News type stuff. It's the NRAs in here. You get racial profiling and not caring that much when ethnic minorities are murdered in the streets. Yeah. Anyway, so he goes and buys a car.
Yeah.
And he turns
gets
up
a postal box. It's important.
The postal box is very important.
Again, I wonder if. So there's a shout out to Wildy Guns and the US Postal Service.
Yes. Both really doing a great job, guys. Well done. These all sound like Trump tweets. So he buys his car, he turns up in it. Martin Balsam says, what's that for? And he goes, bait. And then he walks into the flat and he goes, when I got in here earlier, I just smelled this amazing cooking. I said, what is it? And he says, oh, that's the Kaprov. They live on the bottom floor. Let's go and say hello.
Yeah.
And she's making stuffed cabbage.
Yeah. Which does not smell nice.
No.
I've eaten stuffed cabbage and liked it, but it does not. He should say, wow, what is that smell? It smells like an old lady's died.
Cabbage notoriously doesn't smell good when it's cooking.
Yeah.
It smells like farts.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. He would smell it. Like, surely, Bronson being 6'4", he should smell it and go, oh, I need another adult diaper.
But when they get there, she says, "Oh, would you like to join us for dinner?" And he says, "Yeah, can I have a few minutes to clean up?" Does he mean go and have a wank?
Yeah, he's gonna. He thinks he's in. He's gonna. He's gonna clean his knob in the sink just in the off.
He'd have been livid when her husband showed up. Who looks like John Bluthal. I thought it was him for a minute.
Yeah,
but it's not.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then because we see him, and it's another of the classic cliches that we cut to them at dinner, and she's finishing a joke.
Yes.
And so I said, "I married him in 1931.
And then we hear some smashing and a crashing.
Yeah, again, broken glass.
Yeah.
So much broken glass in this.
So much. And Brosnan, Jeff Deathwish goes out, and two guys are stealing his car.
Yeah. They've taken the bait.
He says, "What's the problem?"
"We're stealing the car. What's it to you?"
"It's my car."
Yeah, he really, like, no one thought, like, can you try and say that less like a Jewish 95-year-old man? "It's my car."
"Oy vey, you're stealing my car." So he should have said, "It's my car already." Yeah. Anyway, they rush him.
Yeah.
He pulls out a gun and...
And this is where the way they do the knife. That's one of the ultimate...
Yes.
It really is like, here's knifey.
You're about to become the sticky.
Yeah. That is a thing that you say before you spunk on someone.
There is a thing, very sticky.
The way they shoot people, like, it's not exciting or intimidating.
No.
That his way, like, where he just put, it's the two-handed shooting, and then it feels like this does come from the Deathwish films, that the throwing back, the ultra-theatrical throwing back.
Yeah.
Maybe Dirty Harry does it as well.
Yes.
But it looks like really shit actors.
It does, but also, like Dirty Harry, when Deathwish and Dirty Harry fire their gun, it doesn't sound like a gun. It goes...
Like
that kind of noise. When other people fight, it's like... Because he's got the best gun.
Yeah, so they've big-dicked his gun even more.
They've big-dicked his gun. But he returns to his dinner, and then Bolson says, "What was that? We heard shooting."
He said, I sent them a message, yeah. Again, this is so humorless. Obviously, it's funny unintentionally, but it's interesting looking back at comparing it with other action films, how unfunny this is.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking that you could... I don't know, I'm now stuck for what you would say.
What, if you shot two people?
Yeah.
You'd say, "I just murdered a couple of people."
Yeah.
If you did it in that Jack Benny style.
Yeah, "I stuffed those cabbages."
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the next day, Maria's being bothered by our friend the dancer in the crop top.
Yeah. Well, we see... Is this where we see a bloke who's outside the area, we see him being killed? Is that...?
Yes.
Because there's just a brief shot where it's just... just to underline the fact that the creeps are bad guys. What's great in that scene is that... And they haven't reshot it, so there's people swarming around him, and one of the blokes in the centre of the shot is holding a plunger. Like, he's wanted to be part of it, but everyone else has nabbed all the best.
Maybe he's, like, in training, so they don't give him a proper weapon yet. Yeah, but
When I said I'm going to get you, sucker, I didn't mean...
they kill a guy who's ventured into their turf.
Yes.
It's like a turf war.
It is, on a global scale.
Yeah,
I'd rather hear both sides of the tale.
We only see one of the other gang, though, and Bronson.
Yeah. And then the chief... is this where we see the chief wants to rest? He goes, "You guys aren't pussies, are you?"
Yeah.
Which, again, he said pussy.
But Bronson punches our dancer friend.
Yeah.
So he wants
$5.
Yeah, the little black kid goes something like, "My man!"
Yeah.
And he does it back really embarrassingly.
There's this fist pump. Yeah. There would be the closing shot, like, and he's wearing a leather jacket to show that he's suddenly cool.
He is pretty cool, though.
But the kids, and we've not seen the kid at any point.
No, we see him again a bit later.
Yeah, in the shop. He gives him an ice cream.
He does give him an ice cream.
So, Bronson, what are you doing?
He takes him on tour and puts his mother in a room four rooms away. Anyway, so he gets home, he gets back to his flat, and Fraker phones him.
Yeah. It's nice that they've got each other's numbers.
It is, isn't it?
They swap digits.
And he threatens him.
Yeah.
He says, "Stay out of my business."
Yeah. He goes, he's dead, just like you're going to be.
Yeah. And then Bronson goes into his kitchen and there's footprints.
There's footprints. And out of nowhere, some Minder-style music.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah.
But it's so cheap. It's like he sees the footprints, and it's almost like they've gone wow, 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 wow.
But then Miss Davis arrives and asks him to her house for dinner.
Yeah.
Basically, she's fallen in love with him.
She wants it.
After she's only met him once. I'm sure
this is because we've seen Schreiker is spoken to in the alley.
Yeah.
Because we've seen the cop lights, like he's parked in the middle of this shithole area and just really surreptitiously. Not surreptitiously at all. Flashes his lights like a dogger attracting trade.
That's probably what Bronson was after. Oh, it was you. Yeah. But is it me or was all the way through this film? Is it Schreiker?
Yeah,
Schreiker.
Yeah.
All the way through this film, he's basically saying, yeah, could you just calm down a bit?
Yeah, yeah. Like he sets him loose. He's like, I want you to be my vigilante. And they're going, hey. Yeah. When I said vigilante,
I meant, well, I will kill one person, not 15. In one night.
Oh, yeah, and so we see the bloke who's hurt his foot because he goes, shit, man, I'm hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks about 45.
Yeah. But the police burst into the Kaprov's house and say, we got reports of you waving a gun at someone.
Yeah.
If you let us take it away, we'll leave it there. But it's my only kind of protection. Yeah.
And when they leave with a gun, they say, thanks, mister.
Yeah.
It's just, there are points where, like, I had to do this in shifts,
mm-hmm.
that you have to sort of walk away and just kind of go, nope, this is for the love of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it have made more sense and been more interesting if those policemen were secretly working for the gang?
Well, that was, and it was hinted at, like when Neil Kinnock gets out of prison quite so quickly, there's the vague suggestion that he might have connections, like he's got a clean criminal record. And how is it when we've just seen him in prison? And he's got, so that I thought they were hinting that there was some, you're going to find a corrupt cop or something like that.
Mm.
And it's hinted at, and they never push it further.
So Bronson comes around and says, don't worry, I've got an idea. I'll build a plank that will hit people in the face.
And it's the Chuckle Brothers.
It's like Wilf Lund.
He's got, it's sort of these weird slapsticky bits.
Yeah.
And again, it's called back to this. They don't plant, again, it just pays off straight away that we see two front teeth.
Well, they're vampire teeth as well. They're like two spiky Nosferatu teeth. And then he says he's thinning the herd. You know, you've just taken a couple of, you've taken some teeth out.
Yeah. Well, they reminded me, like, when I my incisors, I had to have them, when my milk teeth, they wouldn't come out, so the doctor had to take them out. So it's like, it's like they've been extracted by a dentist and then hammered in.
Yeah, but they were proper pointy teeth.
But also, it would knock it in.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? They would end up, he would swallow his teeth rather than...
Also,
unless maybe that's sheer good luck, and one of the gang was a Nosferatu.
I'm thinking it wasn't the gang. I'm thinking it was an actual vampire that was coming to kill them. And when Bronson will go later, haha, I got one of your guys' front teeth. They'll be like, what are you talking about?
It's the master from Salem's Lot.
He was, yes.
Just got really unlucky.
James Mason knocks on his door later on. I'm sorry, did you find a pair of teeth? We're missing them. So, Wildy is here.
Yes.
He's arrived. And everybody from the fucking neighbourhoods come round to have a look.
And it's, again, the campness, the inadvertent campness of, like, the gangs. It's like if Robert Mapplethorpe did gangs. It's, but we know. We've seen the gun.
Yeah, but he also has an advert for it, like we were saying earlier. He said that it uses big game but rounds.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, it's like the opposite of Chekhov. Like, is it, you know, if you see a gun in Act One, it's like that in Michael Winner's world. If you see a gun, you have to use it 20 seconds later.
Yeah, but poor Maria now is snatched from the streets and raped.
Yeah, and this is that. It's almost like they've gone, it's what's expected of us. We've got to give them. It's like Supergrass playing All Right. They have to do it because it's. there are certain tropes of the films. Weirdly, one of the other tropes in the first two films is there's always a scene where you see what a bloody good architect he is.
Mm, oh, yeah, of course, because he's an architect.
And it's odd that they feel the need in this cavalcade of rape and mayhem and violence and unpleasantness that there's always a scene where he's saved them a lot of money and he presents a design and they're like, damn, Kersey's good.
Mm.
But there's none of that in this. We don't see his architectural skills.
No.
But, yeah, it's... Because it's so cheesy, it's so naff, I was almost hoping that you're not going to see a rape scene in it.
Yes.
But it's like, they've just, you know, there is gratuitous tit.
And she had a horrible story about how they wouldn't let her move from that spot because they wanted to get the right lighting. And she was just said it was really cold and unpleasant and everyone was really mean to her.
Yeah, it's...
Just awful. I don't think Michael Winner was very nice.
Yeah. And he would probably say, it's too bleak to sort of.
Yeah, yeah. But
I imagine he would say, calm down, dear.
He would, wouldn't he? But then we cut to Bronson and Mr. Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And he gets, Bronson calls the hospital and manages to get the information that she's okay, she's just broken her arm.
Yeah.
How would he get that information?
Yeah.
Anyway, so they go to the hospital. And then the doctor comes out and says, I'm sorry, Mrs. Rodriguez has expired.
Yeah. How's my wife? Can I see you?
Mrs. Rodriguez has expired.
She's exactly the way a doctor would break that heartbreaking news. It's similar to the way, I think his wife in the first one died, is the news is broken in a similar way.
Oh, is it?
He thinks she's just injured, and it turns out she's died.
There's a blood clot, apparently.
Yeah. Which is, again, why they feel the need to, like, here's how we justify this sudden shift in tone.
Yeah, it's just odd, really odd. But then Bronson goes home and says to Charlie, I'm just going to go out and buy an ice cream. And then he says, I'm an American, or something like that.
Mm.
So he goes to the corner shop.
He goes, this is America, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which, again, Fox News, like, I want to buy an ice cream while holding a gun. He brings his camera with him.
He brings his camera as bait, more bait to catch the giggler, because he's noticed that the giggler snatches handbags or dangly things.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was either going to be his camera or his testicles. So
they're too heavy at Bronson's age. You can't get that close to the ground.
Oh, God. You have to use a little wheelbarrow. But he buys that little kid an ice cream, and then he heads out, and he's sort of swinging his camera around like he's looking for prostitution. And the giggler takes the bait. He grabs it. And then
silly giggler.
Silly old giggler. And then Bronson pulls out Wildy and blows a hole in him.
And everyone cheers. People are delighted.
You get this triumph of music like he's just won a disabled race.
Oh, my Lord. It's the creep that stole my pocketbook a few weeks ago.
All right.
Like he's a child in a wheelchair, and everyone comes out and goes, yay! It's like you've just murdered a man.
Yeah, which is, you know, the way when Trump would have people I'm over-labouring the Trump comparisons.
No, but I think it's
the way when Trump would have people removed from his rallies if they were protesting, and people were going, yeah, beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
So they've killed the giggler, and Neil Kinnock's annoyed.
He does, because one of his gang says, they killed the giggler, man! They killed the fucking giggler! Just in case you missed what just happened. And
killed the giggler man. I'm waiting on a callback for Macbeth.
I tell you what Kinnock should do is he should say, right, that's it, I'm going to phone him again. This won't stand.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not answering. Fine.
Yeah. Hi, Jeff. You killed the giggler.
When I get back from the party conference, you are dead. Then you ring him back. I saw you fall over from the beach, you twat.
I've got enough of bloody problems with Derek Hatton. I don't need this right now.
But he goes around to dinner. Jeff goes to dinner with Miss Davies, and she says, I made chicken because it's the only thing I know how to make. What about toast?
Yeah, and it feels like there's so many things. The cotton eating cognac. It feels like she's visiting him in an old folks home. Like,
yeah.
Your brain takes a while to sort of go, oh, they're going to bang.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a father and daughter relationship.
Yes. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Maybe she's into that sort of thing.
Yeah, it could be. And And she then gives a speech like, damn it, people have got to start to fight back.
Out of nowhere
as
well.
Yeah, yeah.
She says something like, I'm so sick of this city. All right.
And then he said, she wants to know more about him. He says he likes opera, and then later on admits he doesn't.
It's just a joke.
The old opera switcheroo.
Oh, it gets them every time, I tell you. The ladies love that. That's how you know they're DTF. I don't mean they sell sofas.
And then they kiss.
They have a little kiss. And she says, this is the best bit where she says, so are you married? And he goes, oh, no, my wife died. And she's like, oh, let me guess, you're afraid to get close to someone again after your wife died? He goes, yeah, something like that. So, yeah, do they bang at this point?
No, I think they bang later.
Yeah, he says, I've got to go.
Yeah, he's a gentleman.
He is a gentleman. And when he gets home, this is when you have this really pointless filler scene, because he goes home and he keeps Wildy in a little TV cupboard.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not locked or anything. And we know this is an area where people can just walk into your house.
Yeah, yeah.
So that seems a bit silly. And he goes on patrol, and then Kinnick ambushes him with a machine gun. And he drops Wildy.
Yeah, and he falls in the least convincing way I have ever seen. Like the fall where he drops Wildy.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, you know those videos where someone pretends to trip in a supermarket and tries to sue them for the insurance? They are more convincing than the fall he does.
Yeah. Yeah, but he gets chased by loads of the gang. Yeah.
And it's odd because it's like trying to write notes on these chases. They are so nothing.
Yes.
And there's so many of them. It's just, they run up and down some alleys.
They do. It looks like the same alley shot.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and he looks like he can run 10 yards at a time. So there's a real danger that he's going to have a pulmonary embolism at any point.
What I liked about this most, actually, is when he's running away from them, he runs up this fire escape. And he runs through the window. It looks like Frank Spencer's apartment.
Yes, it does.
There's this man in a beret sat in bed.
There's like a Cuba flag.
He's got a Che Guevara poster. And I wanted him, when the second lot came in through his house, I wanted him to go, ooh. That'd have been amazing. But he didn't. But one of them is Frost from Aliens.
Yes.
Another British, American actor living in Britain.
Right, yeah.
And he follows Deathwish up to the roof. And he throws him off.
He throws him off, and it's the most obvious dummy.
Really bad.
It's
they must have been so happy, though, because all the way down it looks like a dummy, but it lands looking like a person.
Yeah, yeah.
So they must have been like, oh, yeah, brilliant. I don't have to reshoot that. Because he kind of lands sitting down with his with his arm on his chin, like he's contemplating something. Instead of just flopping like a dummy.
Yeah, yeah.
So he must have been like, brilliant. Yeah. I bet that was his first take as well.
We're making a great film here, guys. And then Bronson gets the gun back.
Yeah, he just picks up Wildy and then goes home.
And then we see the dead body in the car.
Yeah.
And the cops are gathered around it. And it really looks like the cops are about to go, I bet he drinks Carlin Black Label.
But then Kinnock phones Emil, a guy in the building we met earlier, and tells him, there's something wrong with your wife.
Yeah, your wife's sick. And they've slit her throat.
She slit her throat.
So
vote Labour? Okay. Because, of course, she'd have probably voted Tory at this point. Mid-80s.
Yes.
Yeah. And so Emile's...
And we cut to that, and straight after that, it's obviously horrific. Mm. And then we see Martin Balsam, who is more angry that they've broken his windows. Like we've just seen this horrific murder of an old lady, and yet it's I've got to get onto bloody auto glass now.
But he says, oh, well, you know, there's times like this I want to use the thing Charlie gave me.
Yeah.
And he goes to his cupboard and there's an extensive collection of pornography. No, it's two machine guns.
Yes. He could have mentioned it earlier.
He said he brought them back from the war.
Whereas, you know, Bronson's had to rely on mail order guns.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of this. And then Bronson says, does the ammo work? And he goes, oh, you bet your ass. So then Bronson decides to go back to Davis's house.
He gets in the car that we'd seen being fucked up by those two miscreants earlier.
That's right, yeah. I guess that's the one car.
The car's fine.
That's the one American car they had.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the documentary I watched about this, I say documentary, it was like the film they did behind the scenes at the time. The production designers were saying how there were certain things they had to bring in, especially from America. So I'm guessing this car is one of them.
Right, yeah.
So they couldn't let it get damaged.
Yeah, and it's difficult in the 80s. These days, you just go on Facebook, Hivemind. Can anyone get me a Cadillac? Go.
Mm. Does that work?
I've never seen it. I think I don't know if it works because my level of inbuilt shame, I would never finish a Facebook status with go.
I'd do that for a copy of the film Animal Farm because it's a film that was in heavy rotation apparently when I was young. At school, people would talk about it. But yet, when you asked anybody, had they seen it, they'd always say, well, no, I haven't seen it. I've heard about it.
Yeah.
To the point where I was convinced it didn't exist. And then Channel 4 did a documentary about it saying it did actually exist. Right. So I'd say, hive mind, Facebook, get me a copy of Animal Farm. Go. And then whoever brought it to me, I would call the police on them. Have you ever seen Animal Farm?
I've never. I think of it as in the same era as when people would misreport the characters from Pugwash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Roger, the cabin boy.
That it was the same thing.
Yeah.
That those. There'd be some guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it's definitely semen stains.
Mm.
And then. And to the point where if you went, well, it actually isn't.
No, it's fucked a child.
Yeah.
So Bronson goes to Davis's house, and she's now decided she's leaving the city.
Yeah. Which is odd after a first date.
Exactly. Basically, I think he was just really bad at kissing.
Yeah.
She says she's going to leave the city.
She's kind of gone. I've realised that kiss has opened up some of my granddad issues that I've been struggling with for a while.
I'm going to go and see my granddad. But they have sex.
They do.
And quite sensual sex as well, I imagine.
And then I imagine she does most of the work.
I'd imagine. I want to see their sex scene with him just kind of going, like in the film MacGruber.
Well, this is where they miss some product placement opportunities. I'm sure Wildy could have. It's got another attachment.
Attachment, yeah.
But this is, you can tell that they're in it because he explains the murder of his wife.
He does, and his daughter. He also opens up about the fact that his daughter's dead as well. He doesn't say that. He said she was murdered, didn't he? Doesn't he?
Yeah.
But he doesn't mention any raping stuff.
No.
Doesn't want
to. You don't want to spoil the atmosphere.
It's not a pillow talk, is it? Talk about rape, really. So he trusts her and he opens up to her. And you know what, Steve? I think this relationship's got a chance.
It has.
Because he's finally opened up to someone.
It isn't like his penis has got a reverse Midas touch.
No, not at all. No, he hasn't filled her with deadly seed that will lead to her death. So he says, look, I just have to go and pick up some stuff from my P.O. box.
Yeah, which is, whenever I've had sex, that's the first thing on my mind.
Well, you've emptied your sack. Time to fill it again. So he goes to the P.O. box. Meanwhile, he's being followed by Fraker, by Neil Kinnock and Roy Hattersley. And they, while he's in there getting his P.O. box, they punch her in the face and let the parking brake go.
Yeah.
And the car goes down the hill and then explodes.
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. He's just fallen in love again.
I mean, at least he got his jollies in before.
That's right. I mean, better than after. Imagine if he'd have gone through, let me through, I'm a doctor, and started having sex with her. That'd be awful. Niche, though.
But I don't put it beyond Michael Winner. Like, I can imagine they go, we need to lose the male rape and the post-car crash. Sex. We'll save it for Crash in the 90s.
Yeah, he was probably... You know, Michael Winner at one point was working on a Captain America movie.
Really?
Really.
Bloody Nora.
Yeah, imagine how bad that would have been. I mean, this was when they made that terrible one in the early 90s.
Right.
So it was originally going to be him.
I mean, it would be a controversial thing if in the middle of this run, they suddenly brought him, if he wasn't dead, if they didn't have him as success, and they go, well, yeah, Endgame is being directed by Michael Winner.
And Jeff Deathwish was frozen in the Antarctic and thawed out to be a hero out of his own time. He'd be like going, where's the Polaroid cameras are still here? Where's the vinyl? Everyone still uses vinyl. Oh, okay. Anyway, so obviously he's very upset about this and the police take him into protective custody.
Yeah, again, just a phrase. Just like, yeah, let's just say protective custody.
Yeah. They effectively arrested him. Meanwhile, Martin Balsam...
His shop's on fire.
His taxi shop is on fire. And then his flat gets attacked.
Yeah. So he goes to get the stash of guns.
That's right. But he uses the wrong one. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or he can't make it work anyway.
Yeah.
And then he has this peculiar medical condition that when he's grabbed on the fire escape, he turns into a young stuntman and gets thrown off of the side. I've heard that can happen.
It is... He suddenly...
In moments of extreme stress.
It's the adrenaline. He suddenly loses at least 8 stone.
But he's still got the white hair, so it's definitely him. But he gets thrown off of the fire escape.
And it really, like, by this point, the extras, it, like the mob scenes, it begins to resemble a sort of 1980s Doctor Who. Where just the car, where it's someone's idea of dystopia.
Yes. But also at times it slightly resembles Hill's Angels. You just get this gang of young dancers jumping around. Yeah. You expect him to come out and do a song about rape.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Every now and then someone's go, "Fuck you, man,"
to Benny Hill. Benny Hill wouldn't be out of place in this. He'd be great. Because he was doing rap at this point. He was really pushing the envelope. Yeah, yeah. So, Benny has to go to hospital. So Bronson visits him in hospital. And he tells him, you know, that one of the guns is still there.
Yeah. Yeah, blow the scum away, he says.
So he escapes. And when Ed Lauter comes in to see where he is, he goes, "Oh, he had something he had to go and take care of."
And Ed Lauter's not happy.
No, he's lost him.
And so we see him get him some parcels.
Some more parcels, which he kept quiet about. He must have been a buy one, get one free situation with Wildy. Amazing. I mean, spoiler alert, he buys a bazooka, fire the
it's
post.
Nice that he's we don't see the mail order. I like to think that he's doing like one of those turn-based role-playing games that he's...
Oh, wouldn't that be good? That'd be a great scene.
Yeah, he's getting some Britannia CDs that he keeps forgetting to cancel the subscription for.
One of those decorative plates. The marriage of Ferguson and he buys a bazooka by post.
Yeah,
do you think you can do that in America in the 80s?
I like to think you can. I like to think you can still do it.
I reckon you can in America. So Maria's husband comes round to Bronson's flat and helps him assemble this machine gun.
Yeah.
And then he says to Bronson, this is my favourite bit of hinting in the whole film, he says, "I've only got a zip gun." And Bronson just completely ignores that. It's like he's always saying, "Could you give me a gun, please? Because I've only got a zip gun." But he completely ignores him. He's like, "Okay, I'll just use my zip gun."
Yeah, and meanwhile, he's got like a machine gun and a missile launcher.
Another pistol, which he could have easily given him. What a fucking arsehole. But Fraker hears that Bronson's back.
Yeah, so we're heading towards a showdown.
We are, because he literally uses his phone again and phones the Lib Dems. Or would it be the Socialist Democrats?
Yeah, the STP.
The STP.
He David calls Owen.
Owen and Frost and Cyril Smith.
Shirley Williams is on her way.
To come in and help him out. And they do. They duly all come in on their motorbikes.
And this is the point in the film where it's the thing of watching something on streaming where you'll see how long it is to go.
Yeah.
So it's psychologically,
yes.
It affects. And so you... By this point, we're 20 minutes, 15 minutes left. I'm really
out. Right.
This is, I've hit, you know, the London Marathon was yesterday.
Yeah.
We're near the end.
Yeah.
Can Nearly hear the, hoping that the cheering of the crowd is going to see us over the line.
Just about. But anyway, so to cut a long story short, Bronson wanders around the neighbourhood machine gunning people.
Yeah. And it's incredibly boring. Like the whole, it's amazing. Like, you know, There's no humour in it. So there is one where the Jewish old couple, she says, "Eli, it's Mr. Kersey. He just shot some of the creeps."
And then they watch it on telly.
Yeah.
Because the news is showing it from a helicopter. Yeah.
And he takes out a car.
There's
a man on fire, a few men. It's just stunt.
Just a stunt extravaganza. People falling off rooftops.
They really throw themselves back when they, you know, when they're shot. And there's a bit more tit.
Michael Winner's girlfriend at the time, that is.
Oh, is it?
A lady called Sandy Grizzle. Who later on said that he would whip her.
And, oh, is that the one
was her, the one who, the topless lady. "I'll give you a part in the film." Oh, is it a talking part? "No, you get your breasts out." Okay. At least she wasn't the dog in Bullseye. That would have been terrible.
And meanwhile, Bronson is looking older with every shot.
Yeah. I don't think he enjoyed... I don't think he enjoyed the scenes where he had to wander around just machine gunning people.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that was his cup of tea. It kind of looks like he's not enjoying himself.
Yeah. Which is odd for $1.5 million, for 15% of the budget.
Yeah.
You just go...
I'd happily kill people. I'd really kill people for $1 million.
Like, do some acting.
Yeah.
paying you $1.5 million to act.
But at one point, the chief turns up and joins in shooting people. And then Bronson says he's got to go back and get some ammo for Wildy.
Yeah.
He goes back to his apartment.
And we've seen Alex Winter get shot. Ed Lauter shoots Alex Winter.
Oh, yeah. He goes back to his apartment and Fraker bursts in. And just as then, Ed Lauter bursts in as well. Yeah. And they shoot each other. And then Bronson shoots Neil Kinnock about 60 times.
Yeah.
And then he stands up and says, "Bulletproof vest, asshole." And then, because Bronson sat down because he's going to call an ambulance for Ed Lauter. And then he remembers that he's got a bazooka just by the phone. He's obsessed with keeping things by tables. Yeah, yeah. And he pulls it out and shoots a rocket at Neil Kinnock and blows him up.
And that's the only, like, that's all they had for this, for the fight, for the 15 minutes. Was like, we know, and it was obvious the way they dangled it when you first see it. He's going to do him with a rocket launcher.
Mm. And it's a bit like the end of The Phantom Menace, because once Kinnock explodes, the rest of them just put down their weapons and just walk off.
Yeah, it really
like
is.
They've been deactivated.
Like, yeah, it's like,
I really enjoyed the fact that once the dust settles, you cut back to Bronson and Ed Lauter in the apartment. And there's literally no damage whatsoever.
Yeah.
If you'd have fired a rocket in this room, you and I would have got hurt and there'd be stuff everywhere, but no. It's just a perfect hole in the wall. Yeah.
Maybe that's why Charlie's flat was so immaculate. It's just...
Maybe he bomb-proofed it. He was in the army.
But it really is just... You get to the end and you're just like... It's a fascinatingly bad film.
Yes. And then Ed Lauter just says, "You better go."
Yeah, yeah.
And then it cuts to Bronson with suitcases just walking up the street. And then it ends, just says the end.
Yeah.
And then that really bad music comes on again. It's really bad, isn't it?
It is. I'm trying to think if I've ever walked out of a film in the cinema.
Hmm.
Like, the nearest I ever came to it was Very, Very Bad Things.
Oh, I haven't
seen
that.
Late 90s. I hated that so much that, but I felt like I had to punish myself by watching the whole thing.
Yeah.
But this is the fascinating thing, that watching these things that held as a kid, I thought these were like the height of naughtiness and like, oh my goodness, you know, the frisson of mischief and forbidden fruit. Yeah. And then you see it and it's just bollocks.
Yes.
And then watching Chinatown or watching films from much earlier, which are way more scary or way more memorable for certain scenes of violence.
Hmm. Did you see the remake? Oh, not of Death Wish 3, of the first film.
No, the Bruce Willis one, I've not.
No, I don't think I'm going to watch it.
Because it got such bad reviews.
Yeah, it did.
That,
and it came around at such a bad time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not long after Charlottesville, I think.
Yes.
Which is the worst kind of pornography you could release.
Yeah,
at that
exactly,
point.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've reached the point of the podcast where I'm going to ask you some quick-fire questions. So here we go. Number one, who is the best, in your opinion, Arnie or Sly?
I'm going to say Arnie, I think, because he's... It's interesting, because Sylvester Stallone has... I don't know how long these answers are meant to be, but Sylvester Stallone has done some brilliant stuff, like Rocky and First Blood. They're fucking brilliant. Demolition Man, I think, is a really good film.
Yep.
But it's like Arnie is kind of... There are certain... The 80s gives us archetypes, and Arnie becomes the archetype.
Mm.
So I think he is the better action actor, but oddly, Stallone is kind of more interesting in other ways.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But it's also interesting that there's the similarity. So Sylvester Stallone is the work the shaft, cup the balls, whereas Arnie is eating is not cheating, if you know that that story about him.
Well, yes, I do.
So
yeah. Also, you got the fact that Stallone is an actor who fell into action, whereas Schwarzenegger is basically an action actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Stallone is capable of doing proper acting as well. Feels like it.
Yeah, and like Rocky won Oscar.
Yeah. Won Best Screenplay.
Yeah, yeah.
And Best Director, I want to say. Might not be.
Right,
Best film, anyway.
Whereas, I'd never seen in prep, so I'd never seen Commando was one I'd never seen.
Mm.
And so, again, the frisson of, like, I thought, I'm going to see that. I'd seen certain bits from it. I'd never watched that. And I hadn't realised quite how homoerotic that is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with Bennett.
He was a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Who, you know, who was used for how he looked, whereas, yeah, Stallone's got chops.
Yeah. What's the best action movie of all time? You were debating about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I'm presuming there are certain films in this, as this podcast progresses, you're going to hear the same, you're going to hear lots of people say Die Hard.
Yes.
And it's almost, it's interesting now that there are, because Die Hard sort of shapes the way we all think about these films now, because it's the right, it's genuine, you know, it probably is the best.
Mm.
But it's also, it's funny in the right ways. So you know, asshole, I'm not the one who just got butt-fucked on national TV, Dwayne.
Mm.
And like, oh, we're going to need a few more FBI guys.
Mm.
Like, there's so many funny bits, and it's the, you know, it's done properly.
Yeah.
But then there are certain other films that I think the, my favourite action film is The Taken of Pelham 1-2-3.
Mm.
I think that is absolutely brilliant.
It's a great show.
The genuine peril. And where one or two, this is similar to both Pelham and Die Hard, is one or two deaths are significant. So when Takagi gets shot, when Ellis gets shot in Die Hard, it matters. And it's why Die Hard 2 is such, I hate so much, because taking out a plane it feels just incredibly crap. That's a really weak word to use. So the Taken of Pelham 1-2-3 comes in. And interestingly, both Pelham and Die Hard are based on novels.
That's right.
And both novels are much bleaker.
Oh, really?
And in both films, the heroes in both the novels are much older men who are sort of made younger for the film. So it could be that. I've got a list of possibles here. There's a sort of philosophical debate about what do you call an action film? Like, so can you call The Thing an action film, or is it a sci-fi film?
I'd say it's a sci-fi horror film.
Yeah. So, but there's enough action in it that I was.
Yeah.
Me and my brother works in. You've met my brother.
I've met your brother. Yeah.
And so we were having quite a long debate, because, like, could you consider The Empire Strikes Back an action film? Probably not. But I've seen some polls have listed it in their top 100. Fury Road, I think, as a shout to be up there. Mad Max 2,
yeah,
got a shout to be up
definitely.
There. I'd never seen Sorcerer. Sorcerer and The Wages of Fear, I think, are both absolutely incredible. I think Die Hard defines. It probably is Die Hard, but Sorcerer, I was utterly blown away by.
What Die Hard does, I think, is it strips away the conventions of action that you had to have a giant muscle bound bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And then Die Hard comes along and it's just a schlub that saves the day.
Yeah.
And from then on, it could be anybody.
Yeah. And that's why I like Walter Matthau in Pelham.
Yeah.
But I'd also, so the other ones I've written, because otherwise we'll be here all day.
Uh-huh.
Nice Guys, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
No good. Yeah.
Running Scared, which was one that I'd originally wondered if I was going to suggest. And then I thought, again, it's a film I like too much.
Yeah.
But that's a terrific film. 2 Minute Warning, when I was a kid, scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
But watching it again, it's not. But I remember that. I got utterly freaked out by that. The Raid is really good.
Yeah.
There's a couple of is it Jean-Pierre Melville? I can remember his first names. Where the influence he has is incredible, but they look so dated. So he does Le Samurai, and there's one called Unflick, and it's got Richard Crenna in it. And it's brilliant, but there's a scene in which someone has to get on a moving train from a helicopter, and it's a model helicopter. So it's great, and it's really influential, but you look at it, and the disbelief cannot be suspended, because it's obviously a cheap model.
Yeah.
But probably Adventures in Babysitting.
That's a great choice, because it's got its own song.
Yeah. But Taken of Pelham 1-2-3 is like, that's my favourite.
Yeah.
Acknowledging that, you know, Aliens or Die Hard are probably difficult to get beyond.
It's a solid trio, though. Terrorists have taken over a skyscraper. You can take three celebrities with you to stop them. Who are you taking up the shard and why?
This is quite similar to a question. I once had a thing printed in the NME in the end of year poll in 1999. Which three celebrities do you send to meet the Blair Witch? And I got it printed in the NME. I said Aphex Twin on his own, the witch would fucking shit itself. Possibly, because it's in a skyscraper, so you need people who are not afraid of heights.
Yeah.
So people who've got a proven bravery with heights. So John Noakes, Eddie the Eagle Edwards and Icarus.
Right.
Or if you need them to be handy in a skyscraper, Alan Sugar, Karen Brady and Nick Hewer.
Yes. if you can go back in time and stop someone being born, who is it? Much like Desert Island Discs, I'm giving you Hitler.
Actually, Michael Winner. Yeah, no, that's it. That's absolutely who it is. Michael Winner.
Perfect.
Based on this film.
A hypothetical fist fight takes place between Rocky Balboa and John Matrix from Commando. Who wins?
I didn't know until I'd initially seen this question as John Matrix.
Yeah, I thought, because
I'd not seen Commando, I thought that was Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I've had that. I've had this a lot, which is why I've had to add that. Suffix.
It's interesting because again, John Matrix, he's got the same hair as Donald Fisher from Home and Away.
He does.
And I think if he's gone Commando, he's not wearing any pants. So I think he could be beaten. Balboa is a proper street fighter, whereas Matrix, you know, is too worried about his daughter.
And Donald Fisher?
Donald Fisher, savage.
He's too worried about Bobby.
Yeah.
Doesn't he adopt her in the end?
I think so. But wasn't she his actual dad? Didn't it turn out that
wasn't she his dad?
Other way around.
That would have been a hell of a twist. I don't remember. Please write in and let us know if you can remember Home and Away from the late 80s.
Yeah. Well, obviously Ailsa was the one because she was an actual killer.
She was an actual killer. And she was a ghost.
That special effect in that episode of Home and Away was more scary than anything in Death Wish 3.
That's true. If you could make your own 80s action movie, what would it be about and who would be the lead?
I might do a film in which a man gains vengeance on anyone who forced him to watch Death Wish 3. And it would star me. I remember before I talked about this with my old colleague, Greg Davis, we'd had an idea pre-7-7, so this would never be a thing now, that a heist on the London Underground, so basically taking the obsession with Pelham 123, the way they get caught in Pelham 123 is, in the film, it's a fairly obvious way they give themselves away. It's presented as Mathau having a brainwave, but they stop at a point where it's obvious that they're going to get off the thing. Whereas this is almost combining our previous chat about Deathline, that if it was a heist on the London Underground that involved them escaping via a disused tube station... that no one knew about, but then the hero would be like someone who knew about, be an older man who knew about. Basically Pelham 123 on the London Underground, I like, that's why I love Hot Fuzz, for that thing of like, you know, doing British, you know, doing American style action in Britain. I love that thing. So some sort of like, someone is threatening to blow up the Thames flood barrier.
Who's going to be the hero? Jeffrey Palmer?
I was trying to think of like as someone of that age. Yeah. He's a good shout. I had Jim Carter.
I'd prefer Jim Carter. Yeah. He's got that lovely voice. Yes.
Or like Michael Palin. But though, you know, basically going like the novels of Die Hard and Pelham, of have, you know, if you have an older hero.
Yeah.
I had Felix Dexter. God rest his soul. I thought he would be really good as well.
He would be. Shame he's not alive anymore. He was great.
It's the only reason these films won't get made.
It is.
But Jim Carter, I thought, would be like, you know, as like a London Underground employee.
What would you call it?
I didn't have it. This is the, I was really struggling. Like the Floodberry one. Flood.
Call it Tube.
Yeah. Well, it's because if it's like the Taken of Pelham 123, so Cockfosters. The Taking of Cockfosters
is good. Should we go with that?
Yeah.
Jim Carter in The Taking of Cockfosters. Great. Well, Steve...
See it, say it, sort it.
That's too modern a reference. Are we basing it
modern
day?
Yeah, that's the thing. It should be the 80s. It should just be, fucking hell, this is disgusting. what was it? Managed Decline. That would be the film, Managed Decline.
Yeah. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry I made you watch Death Wish 3.
It's okay. I feel a stronger person for the experience.
And you look it. Thanks. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
to the Musical Podcast. I'm Kiri.
And I'm Jade.
And I'm Dave.
Dave's on keys. But we don't play that too much because otherwise we'll have to pay some people rights money.
Yeah. We do a live show where comedians come and sing their favourite musical theatre songs in front of a live audience. This podcast
is us bringing that person inside of a building.
Welcome to Just a Minute with Jade Adams.
I panicked.
Enjoy.
Great Big Owl.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.